Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All righty, hour number two. What's happening? Tinky and Tierney coming here from the Tinky and Tierney Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. Millions of Americans finance the home of their dreams with their help. They can help you as well. Rocket Mortgage, push button, get mortgage. Troy Polamalu was phenomenal. So if you want to check that out again, maybe send it to a buddy, an old USC fan, an old Steeler fan, just go to our podcast. A million ways to find it, whether it's Apple, whether it's Apple iTunes, radio.com, CBS Sports Radio, all the various interviews, including one we did a couple of weeks ago with Matt Rhule, who is the head coach for Baylor, who's got them on a terrific trajectory. And that fits the conversation now. I insert that for a reason because my partner, Tiki, is prepared to make a case, not that you think that the committee will open the door for Baylor to play for a championship.
Yeah.
But Tiki thinks that they should, or they could open the
door.
The
problem is they're ranked ninth in last week's college football playoff poll.
A little bit of an issue.
It's a big issue unless the one that comes out tonight jumps them significantly higher.
Describe significantly.
So
Three slots?
At least three. Get them in the six window. Because then it becomes viable. But that's hard to do. Obviously, because then they'd have to jump Oklahoma,
which is not happening.
Which is not happening. Or and Alabama's going to have to fall, like precipitously fall. Alabama's got to fall down to like eight or nine. And so I don't think
that that's going to happen.
I don't think that's going to happen either. And it's a shame because when you look at Baylor, well, first of all, let's reset. So last week the Ohio State Buckeyes jumped LSU. We speculated because the committee didn't want LSU with the number one seed to potentially lose in the SEC championship game, and then only have to fall like two spots, and then Alabama, if they had beaten Auburn, could still climb back in, and you may have two or three SEC teams. I don't think that was the case, but let's reset. Ohio State's number one, LSU's number two. This likely will not change because these two teams took care of business this past weekend, including Ohio State destroying Michigan in a rivalry game.
56 points, 600 yards.
Clemson walked away from, I forgot who even they played last week, but they South Carolina. They walked away from South Carolina. And Georgia took care of business as well. And so the top four stay the same. Alabama loses, so they're falling. Utah, Oklahoma will likely move up. So the question becomes, who fits into that fourth slot after championship weekend? And so we look at the championship games. The SEC championship is obviously an important one because it's two top four teams. But let's say LSU wins that one just for argument's sake.
Georgia's gone.
And then Georgia's gone. As a two-loss non-conference champion, they're not getting in. So Georgia's out of the conversation. And so that brings us to the most important championship games. The Pac-12 is interesting. Because
it's paramount.
It is, but it's interesting because whoever wins is going to have to fight the perception of the Pac-12.
That's true.
Right? But the
I don't think Utah's fight will be as uphill as you think. I'm definitely going to let you go.
Yeah.
But I believe behind those walls in that committee room, I believe Utah's getting a lot of respect. Keep going.
Yep. And
I'm
maybe
and
likely because USC, who they lost to, has climbed into the top 25 of the college football playoff. That helps them, even though that loss kind of felt unexcusable at the time. It helps them in retrospect, if that gives you any clarity.
Oh, I think that happens a lot of times.
It does, but at the time, Utah shouldn't have lost to USC. But the way USC was scuffling a little bit.
Quarterback issues. Quarterback,
exactly. Which brings us to what I think is the most important championship game this weekend, and that's the Big 12 championship, between a rematch between Oklahoma and Baylor. Now, Baylor, their only loss on the season was to Oklahoma. And that was a home game against the 10th ranked. I think they were 10th at the time.
I thought they were 9.
Maybe they were 9, whatever it was, Oklahoma, because they had previously lost. And so Oklahoma, who is really good, has a dynamic offense. Defense had been playing better than they previously had. They're actually one of the top defenses in the Big 12 this year. That's not saying much, but it is saying a lot. Last year, Oklahoma was the 101st ranked defense in the country. This year, they're 31st. So it's significantly better than it has been.
It's not an embarrassment.
Exactly. It doesn't mean that they're not want to give up, 30 points.
I got you.
Which is exactly what happened. Because in the Baylor game, the first Baylor game, Baylor was walking away from Oklahoma.
Killing them.
It was 31-10 in this game at halftime. Mm-hmm. So Baylor was exercising itself. Baylor was proving that they belonged undefeated. They're going to, win the Big 12. If they even had to rematch Oklahoma, they would probably beat them again the way that they were handling them. But then they short-circuited in the second half, or more aptly, Jalen Hurts and Oklahoma's offense exploded and took off and found a way to win that game by a field goal, 34-31. So they held Baylor scoreless in the second half, which makes this rematch interesting, because Baylor, who was great up until the second half of that Oklahoma game, had a chance to define itself as one of the best teams in the country. If they win that game, they probably jump up to 5 or 6.
No question.
In the college football rankings. So they have the chance, unlike any of these other teams, to get revenge on the team that set them back.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And if they do it in convincing fashion, say the first half of the first game is exactly how the whole game goes this time in the Big 12 championship.
But why should it have to? Why should it have to be that lopsided?
Because they only lost by three points. Because at nine.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
At nine, I got you. They need to destroy Oklahoma.
Yeah, no, I got you. Okay, I got you.
Now, if that, I don't know, I'm not saying that's going to happen, but
that's
saying.
That's not going to happen. There's no way they're going to destroy Oklahoma.
But BT, they were winning 34.
They're not destroying
They were winning
Oklahoma.
31 to 10.
I understand.
But if it happens.
I picked them. That was one of my picks. I remember. Get the 10 points.
They're
not destroying Oklahoma.
If they let's say, beat them convincingly. If they beat them by 2 touchdowns.
Not happening.
And all of a sudden, they're 12-1. As a Big 12 champion who beat Oklahoma, who knows where they're going to be after this week. They're probably going to be 6 or so, Oklahoma, 5 or 6 this week, because Alabama's got to fall behind them.
Mm-hmm.
Then I think they deserve, on the quality of their record and their only loss being to a team that's in the top 10,
yep,
they deserve to be in the Final Four of the college football playoff.
It's a compelling case. All right, so let me get the Cliff Note version here. That was a lot. You laid that out great, man. That was really good. All right, so Ohio State, LSU.
Yep, we know Clemson. The top teams.
No, I'm just reading here. All right, Georgia. So if Georgia loses the SEC title game, 2-loss non-champions,
yep,
leave. You got to leave the party. They're gone.
Sorry.
We know that.
Thanks for participating.
Thanks for coming. Here's a trophy. Get lost. Bama's gone. Now it comes down to Utah in the Pac-12 championship, Oklahoma and Baylor playing for the Big 12 championship. Based on the fact... Now, let me ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
If Baylor didn't jump out to that huge lead,
yeah,
they still lost by 3.
I would feel differently.
Okay.
I would feel differently,
okay,
DT.
That's why I thought you might say that. Now, let me flip this
to
you. If that's the case, why shouldn't the people in the committee room, why would they place more emphasis on the first half rather than the second half?
They're not.
What are you extrapolating?
This is
good,
all me.
The really good or the really bad?
And
if it's down the middle, that favors Utah. If it's down the middle.
Well, here's... So,
if they're not getting style points
in
defeat.
I like the idea. And this happened with Oklahoma 2 years ago. Well, when did they lose to Texas? Was that last year or 2 years? I can't remember. I remember they lost to Texas in the regular season.
2 years ago.
I can't remember when it was.
The Red River. I think it was 2 years.
But they lost to Texas... And then they beat them. They got revenge against them,
yep,
in the Big 12 championship, which propelled them into the college football playoff Final Four.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the committee puts an emphasis on like having a mistake, a loss, and then correcting that mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And the Big 12 is really the only conference that allows you to do that. Because they play each other. Like, their schedule isn't full of...
I get it.
Isn't full of Western Carolinas.
No, you know, but they got some Stephen F. Austins in there and some...
True.
UTEPs.
True.
And some San Antonios.
But maybe there's one, because they play a full conference schedule.
No,
like, everybody plays everybody, so there's not technically an easy game in the Big 12.
Baylor
so
played Rice. Rice is one of the worst teams in the country. They
played
Stephen F. Austin. You know, unless you're going to play Duke in basketball, I mean, that's not a team you mind playing in football. I hear you. Generally, there's fewer. I don't see any. Stephen F. Austin? Yeah. Okay. I mean, a small case can be made for that. I can't say that you're wrong. Let me ask you.
And by
you
the
this.
Way, they destroyed Stephen F. Austin. And
I know, as they should.
They destroyed UT San Antonio.
They should. And they lost. Both of them. They didn't
Rice was interesting.
They won 21-13. That was at Rice.
That was interesting.
You beat Rice by 8 points. Rice is good in a lot of things. They're brilliant students.
They're 3-9.
Great
right
baseball
now.
Program.
They're 3-9 right now.
They shouldn't have a football team.
Yeah, they're 3-9.
With all due respect. So you beat Rice. Okay, so that's the thing. I don't know if they're looking at every single week. If the committee, and they should, I think you have to look at everything. But if they really thoroughly, if it's as close as you think it might be, and you could be right, then they need to look at that Rice game and say, this is not hyperbole. Rice is statistically one of the worst teams in America. They almost lost that game.
Yeah.
How does that get weighted? And let me ask you this. Will they ask themselves in the room, I don't even know how you answer this because it's just a theoretical, who's better? I mean, if Baylor played Utah on a neutral field, who would win? As much as I love Coach Rule, I wish he was coaching the Jets. He's going to be coaching somewhere. We had him on the show the other day. I want to play something for you in a minute.
Carolina Panthers.
I would bet Utah. I would bet Utah,
really?
And I would predict Utah.
But why?
Utah is a superior, I keep saying this, defensive team.
It's five NFL players on defense. It's hard to disagree because of where these kids are rated. Now, individually, you're probably right. Right? Look at them. They're giving up almost a touchdown and a field goal. That's it. That's all they're giving up. They're giving up 11 points on
the
season.
Third best in college football.
Third best. Yeah,
third.
Exactly. But who have they beaten?
And they run the football.
True,
so
but who have they beaten? I mean, they played Oklahoma, who was the highest ranked opponent out of any of these two schedules. They destroyed him in the first half. You're taking the first half over.
Don't
you got
me
it.
And one night I was walking out of a bar 20 years ago and Jennifer Aniston was walking by me. I almost had the gumption to ask her out. Almost.
You know what I mean? But it was Oklahoma.
That doesn't count.
It was Oklahoma.
So what?
The only team.
Oklahoma's not number 1, 2, 3, or 4. Who, I mean, they're good.
The only team that Utah has beaten that was ranked was Arizona State. The only team that they've beaten that's currently ranked is nobody.
But who has Baylor beaten? I'm going to ask you again. Who's Baylor beaten? The only team that they've beaten, the only team that they played that's ranked
was USC.
No, it was Oklahoma. I'm talking about Baylor. I mean, Baylor.
Oh, yes.
I mean, Iowa State. All right, Iowa State's a decent pro. Decent. Good home field. I get that cycle.
They played tough.
Kansas State in Manhattan. Tough venue. Texas Tech, not what they were. You know, Oklahoma State, you just saw them. Oklahoma State, any good? Not really. I mean, they're not that good. West Virginia's not like they were a couple of years
Oklahoma
back.
Oklahoma State was 20. They were top 25. They were 21st. What are they? Are they still ranked?
No, they're not.
No, they won't be. They won't be now.
They're not now. Now, if you want to tell me that collectively, Baylor's schedule is a little tougher than Utah, I'll grant you that. I think that's fair. I do. And I think your entire premise is a smart one.
But
I think it's an interesting one.
I think
one.
The Big 12 is tougher than the Pac-12, ultimately. And it's got to come down to that at some point.
I do, too, with Stanford being down. And, yeah, I do. I agree with that.
So it's Oregon, USC, and Utah. Those are the viable teams in the Pac-12. Now, Arizona State plays tough. Washington plays tough.
Washington's a decent program for sure. I got you. So, let's get this on the record. You don't think this will happen. You think that
I think
it should.
I think it's hard for Baylor to come from 9 unless they're ranked 6th tonight to come from 9 and get into 4. I think it's almost impossible for them to come from 9 to get into 4. Unless they make a big jump tonight.
Yeah.
But I think
tonight
they should
be interesting.
Because the one game that they lost, they can get revenge on.
Yeah.
And that's in the big
But you can't rank them accordingly based on what they might do.
I know. Well, I know.
Which is a problem.
I agree.
Because how high will they jump?
That's right.
I hear you. No, listen, it's pretty logical.
There's an argument.
I think you laid out well.
There's
that was
an
a
argument.
Fun conversation. That was good. Nicely done there, Teague. I like that. That's always fun. I mean, there's really no right or wrong. We'll eventually get the answer, but that was good. Coming up here, what's not good is Jim Harbaugh. I mean, he's been good. He's just not good when he has to be. He's not good when it matters against the games that they really need to win. And Jim Harbaugh, we kind of touched on this yesterday, is getting a little testy and a little snippy with the media. I want to circle back to that. We'll do that inbounds, out of bounds as well. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line here on Tiki and Tierney is 1-855-212-4227. Brought to you by GEICO. It's 1-855-212-4227. for CBS. Great news. Quick way to save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com. And in 15 minutes, save 15% or more on car insurance. So, inbounds, out of bounds, coming up next segment. Let's see what Samter threw together. See if he was actually working today or if he just mailed it in. Let's see here. A little something on good. A little Minshew Mania is always fun. All right. A little something on the Bucks. All right. Mix it up a little bit. A little something on Ole Miss's situation. And, yep. Samter did work today. Good job. That is coming up
Ole
next
Miss.
Year on Tiki and Tierney.
You see the picture of Harbaugh getting off the plane in Oxford?
Oh, jeez. That's ridiculous. Listen, let me get back to Jim Harbaugh for a second.
Okay, go ahead.
All right. Here's my problem with Jim Harbaugh, and I want to play this because it was a petty response from a very inbounds questions from a media member. That aside, I know he's incredibly competitive and he's pissed off, and I get it. You're owned by the Buckeyes. You went there. You understand the gravity of this matchup. You know what? I can't prove this, but it's what's projected. And it's not just the fact that they've lost, what, eight straight, whatever it is.
Eight, yeah.
And they've given up 118 points in the last two games combined, which is pathetic, and nearly 1,300 yards combined, which is sickening. I truly feel, again, I can't prove this. I feel, and this comes from the coach, that Ohio State views this game as life or death in the athletic sense. And I do not get that feeling from Michigan. I don't feel like Michigan embraces this rivalry the way they once used to. And I'm stunned that Jim Harbaugh has not created this. I know that they hate each other, quote, but they don't project that. And that's disappointing. I'm very surprised Harbaugh's not doing that.
He
hasn't
since
day one.
Because that's what Ohio State does. Remember last year, the Purdue loss, the Ohio State loss at Purdue, a lot of people were speculating the reason that they lost that game was because they spent too much of their week thinking it was a give-me game practicing against Michigan.
Every day, every practice.
That's
they
what
did.
I mean.
Once a week they did something.
But that week in particular, they were like, they didn't worry about Purdue, so they practiced against Michigan.
Yes.
And it kind of showed up in the Michigan game. They just destroyed them.
Yeah.
They knew exactly what Don Brown's scheme was going to be. They're going to play man. We're going to run crossing. We're going to clear out and run crossing routes. And our athletes are better than your athletes. Therefore, we're going to outrun your athletes, catch passes, and go to the house. And that's exactly what happened. And what's crazy about it, BT, is it just from a tactical standpoint, Jim Harbaugh actually has done things to try to fix this, but it's not working. So his defenses are number one in the country, number three in the country, number five in the country, number three in the country, puts out pros. They are a perennially top five ranked defense in the nation. I'm not talking about in the Big Ten. I'm talking in the nation.
It's also a weak offensive conference.
It is, but
to
still.
To be fair.
But still.
Yeah, no, I got
they,
you.
They are sound.
Yeah,
they are. And they put pros in the National Football League.
Devin Bush just went 10th overall.
In this game, they are incompetent.
It's a JV.
It's like they're playing the JV team. Offensively, he was static and stoic, and I'm old school, man. We're going to play good defense, and we're going to run the ball. We're going to play action pass to the tight end, right? That's what he did.
Yeah.
And then Shea Patterson comes in, and they try to open it up a little bit, get a little bit more innovative. They bring in Josh Gattis after saying he wasn't going to hire a new offensive coordinator this offseason. He did. It was fits and starts early, but then they started to roll. So even what he's doing on offense isn't working for Jim Harbaugh. And it might be a psychological thing, because the only games that I've watched Jim Harbaugh get obliterated in is this one. And even the tight ones, he loses them in circumstantial reasons. And it might be because he's not thinking of it as Ohio State is thinking of it and not making this the most important game on his schedule, like Ohio State does.
Listen, I know that they're not coming off a good week here, but Minnesota's had a terrific season.
Yes,
all right?
Of course.
A real renaissance for the Gophers here.
10-2, you're jumping through the ceiling if you're Minnesota.
No
right
doubt.
Now.
They beat Penn State, huge game a couple of weeks back in Minnesota. And that team's taken on flex personality. And there's a surge of energy in that building. And I don't want this to sound the wrong way, because he's not even old, but I want to really find the right word for this, because that's, I like Jim. He feels disinterested's not the right word. I'm never going to say that, but less willing to fight and scrap than I ever thought Jim Harbaugh was willing to fight and scrap. I heard an interview the other day, right? I was, or did I see it? I think it was Bobby Carpenter on ESPN, right? former linebacker for Ohio State, first round pick, wasn't a great pro, great college player, and I believe he does radio in Columbus, and he was talking about what the weight room is like in Ohio State during the offseason. There's a clock that has the countdown to Michigan clock. Everything that they do, every waking hour, everything they consume, every ounce of energy is directed to Michigan. And I don't sense it's a volley. It's a one way tennis match.
Well, I mean,
the ball's going with great fear, and then it's just kind of.
But can they?
It's just blopping over the net back.
But can they do that?
Well, why couldn't they?
Can they? Because they haven't won in so many years.
I'm not going to blame the fans. Like I'm
talking about Harbaugh.
Anybody can get crazy when you're winning. You know, when you're beating your rival 8 times in a row and in a championship conversation every year.
You know, it's interesting.
I'm going to exonerate Michigan fans for a moment. I'm talking about the program. The leadership, even Michigan alums.
Yeah.
And I like them all. The Desmond, I'm like, where's the, I want to hear, like, they're almost like defeated.
Yeah. You know, so it's funny you say this, BT, because it's just to take it a quick aside, and I'm going to make this personal for a second.
Okay.
From Michigan, and I'm going to get back to Michigan because I think Jim Harbaugh is misplaying this in the press.
Mm-hmm.
So perceptually, he's misplaying this. But what you just said rang true for me for a second, because at the beginning of this season, Virginia was projected to win the Coastal, like for the first time in a long time. Really, the Virginia had never won the division. They were the only team in the division, the Coastal, that had never won the division since they went to divisions. But at the beginning of this year, they reached out. University of Virginia reached out and asked me to be a part of a video that said, this year it's different against Virginia Tech. We're not allowing, you know, the Hokies to come in and do it. I got in front of my thing and held it up and said, this year is different. You know, I talked to it, and they produced this video that was all about beating.
I think I remember you doing that.
Yes, exactly. I was sitting
that.
Right here doing it. And so it was all about Tech. And it started 3 months ago.
Yeah.
But it became like a mantra. It was what everybody was thinking about, even though they're just focusing on being good this year. Then Virginia's 9-3 and playing in the ACC championship. But the biggest thing ultimately became the most important thing because we had to beat Virginia Tech in order to get to win the Coastal and get to the ACC championship. But it is something you have to think about. And
yes, rivalry week, you have to embrace it.
Rivalry week means something.
Yeah.
And it has to. Otherwise, you get caught being flat. And you have a bad moment, and it's okay because it doesn't mean anything.
Yep.
But if it means something, that bad moment creates a fire, and it creates an urgency. And that's what it felt like. So back to Michigan. And after this game, we have the sound of him after the game. So after the game, Jim Harbaugh was
I think it has the question, right?
A bunch of different things. And here is one, and then I'm going to tell you why I think he's handling this the wrong way.
Okay.
Coach Harbaugh.
Is this a talent gap? Is it a preparation gap? Is it a coaching gap? What is the biggest difference between you and Ohio State at this point?
I mean, I'll answer your questions, not your insults, so...
That wasn't an insult. I mean, you've been offered 18 points in 2 years.
They played really good. They played good.
That's what I'm asking. What's the biggest difference in the gap between you guys?
They played better today.
Now, he's really testy there. Now, the audio itself doesn't give enough weight to what the energy felt like in that situation.
Yeah, the visual was uncomfortable.
It was uncomfortable.
That's a good point.
He was like staring him
a
down.
Tense.
And, like, tense.
Yeah, I gotcha.
And he can't beat Ohio State. If I was Jim Harbaugh, I would... You have to flip this somehow.
Mm-hmm.
You can't keep having this be media and the internet and everybody just piling on you. And he actually is adding fuel to the fire of that pile by the way he's answering those questions, by being adversarial, by being combative. You almost need to take some levity and throw some levity on it and be like, yeah, you know, I just can't find a way to beat those guys, you know, whatever it may be. Right?
Oof.
Because
that's dangerous.
It's dangerous, but we would stop killing him. Nationally, we would stop killing him. And in fact, we'd probably start rooting for him. We'd probably start saying...
I am rooting for him.
Agreed. But we would probably say it even more. We would be like, I hope he beats Ohio State. You know, good luck. He's going to get killed locally.
Yeah.
But guess what? He's getting killed locally anyways because
no
he can't beat him.
Yeah.
So I think he's misplaying this a little bit because he's creating this, like, I'm crotchety and I hate losing and don't even ask me about it. As opposed to point out the issue and we're going to figure it out, but help us figure it out with you.
But what would he, interesting, but should he say you're right, there is a talent disparity? How do you answer that? If there's no levity,
yes,
you want to be brutally honest.
But then, I would.
Then okay, good. Say, Jim Harbaugh.
So,
go ahead.
And so someone asked me that question.
I'm the reporter. You're Jim. Go ahead.
I would say,
what's the problem, Jim? How come you can't beat him? What's going on?
Yeah, maybe they do have better talent.
Well, why don't you recruit better players than a coach?
Then I got to do a better job of recruiting.
What are you waiting for? You've been here 5 years. What's the story?
They keep going to Ohio State. Exactly. Exactly. And you get them to laugh. I'm serious. It changed. Like, you feel different now.
Yeah.
You feel completely different. I'm going to get killed locally.
Yeah.
Because I'm not recruiting better than Ohio State, but I'm getting killed locally anyways because they're kicking my ass every year.
He's got to win. I mean,
no.
You know he's going to jump to the NFL. You know he is. Because you know he's watching his brother have a ball with Lamar. Mm-hmm. He's probably saying, jeez.
You know what he's saying?
I go 12-4 in the NFL. They'll throw me a parade.
BT?
I lose three times here.
BT?
They will kill me.
You know what he's saying? He's saying, hey, John, Greg Roman,
yeah,
I started that.
Yeah, no.
You remember?
Yeah, you
Colin Kaepernick?
Cap.
Right? What you're doing with Lamar, I did with Cap.
Mm-hmm.
Stop stealing my game plan and taking my success.
And stop beating me in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, you're exactly.
Oh, man, John Harbaugh's awesome. All right, that was another good discussion. I mean, I don't know where Michigan turned. Here's the problem. It's not like, you know, it's not like in other sports, like in the NBA, where you know, you have a series, baseball, there's divisional and championship, and where you play. You lose to Ohio State. You've already had a few other tough losses this year.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going where you want to go. You've got to finish out the string with integrity. You have to go to it's going to be a decent bowl, not a great bowl, not a bad bowl, but probably a B-minus level bowl, B-ish type of bowl. And you got to finish out the season with integrity. But you know that you have failed to accomplish what you were brought here to accomplish.
Yeah.
That's just the bottom line.
They're 9-3.
He hasn't delivered.
They're 9-3. If they were 9-2 and playing in some whatever bowl you're talking about and they beat Ohio State, it'd
be a different tone.
It'd be a completely different tone.
No doubt about it. Let's get the tone for Mack. He's got the update. Inbounds, out of bounds after that. Rich Ackerman. Here's Zach. Go get him, kid. Sunday, it's another NFL on CBS doubleheader. First up, Baltimore's MVP candidate Lamar Jackson takes his show on the road to tackle the Bills, who are balling, just smacked the Cowboys on Thanksgiving. Buffalo's only a game behind the Pats in the AFC East, followed by a rematch of last year's AFC title game. The Pats, the aforementioned Pats, welcome in the suddenly surging. The defense has started to tighten up a little bit for the Chiefs. So you got the Ravens and the Bills. That's very good. You've got the Pats and the Chiefs. That's very good. All starts with the NFL today at noon Eastern, 9 Pacific only on CBS. That's some good football right there.
It is.
And speaking of football, Teek is doing his first CBS game this week coming up.
I am.
With Beth Mowins, right?
Beth Mowins. We'll be down in Cleveland doing the Bengals and the Browns.
You bring a T-shirt for Freddie?
There's a lot of storylines in this game, like emotional storylines in this game, whether it's head coaching or Baker or why can't Odell get any balls. I was just looking at stats through 12 games last year.
Mm-hmm.
With the Giants, he had roughly 75 or so catches and just over 1,000 yards through 12 games. The Browns this year, he's got like 57 catches.
How many targets? There's got to be a huge drop off there.
Big drop. 124 last year with the Giants. I think it's
at this time.
At this time, through 12 games,
gotcha.
He only played 12 games last year with the Giants.
That's
before
right.
He got hurt, so it's almost identical.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I know what you mean.
Comparison. I think it's 80. So it's like it's like 40 less targets.
He can't be thrilled there.
No, he can't.
Nobody could be thrilled.
Well, I mean, nobody's paying attention to it, but post game, two days ago, Sunday, he left early. He's in a locker room in a flash. Got dressed, out. Didn't talk to media. Had his headphones on. Walked straight to the bus. Didn't talk to anybody. Just kind of. He's not saying anything,
which is admirable.
I agreed. He's not being disruptive.
He's not. He hasn't been divisive.
But you can tell he's not happy.
Mm-hmm. Here's the challenge before we get to inbounds, out of bounds. Now, you did this a couple of years with Rondé, and I'm going to make the challenge on the air so everybody can hear it, so I apply the pressure. All right? You know where I'm going with this.
Of course I am.
All right. Now, the game that you did that I'm referencing was a Fox game.
It was a Giants game.
Giants-Tampa?
I think it
was Giants-Tampa
Giants-Tampa.
Years back. So I said, Teek, this was... You know, before he was in the broadcast booth with Kenny and Rondé.
Yep.
I said, you got to slip in something on Teek and Tierney.
Right.
You got to. You got to slip it in.
I did.
Now, it's a different company, Fox, but you waited till the end. I'm like,
I did it after, and it was right before halftime.
No, it was in the fourth quarter.
Are you sure?
I'm positive.
It was right around, because Eli rushed
fourth quarter
in that game?
Yes, fourth quarter.
I think
it was fourth quarter.
Whatever.
You got it in. You got it in. But now we need you to get it in, which is a given, but you need to expand on it. Because now it's CBS. It's the CBS family.
Exactly.
So if you just plug in a radio show, Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network,
right.
Everybody's happy.
That's right.
So now this should be easy.
I expect a real
scout report now.
Hopefully the game doesn't turn into a radio show.
Exactly. Yeah. What's that?
If you want to hear Tiki actually making the mention, I got it right here.
You have it. Nice. Oh, yes. Let's see. Listen to how
this is two years ago, right?
Go ahead.
So many of Eli's interceptions over the course of his career have been tips. Brandon Tierney and I on Tiki and Tierney talk about that all the time. Makes it hard to evaluate some of his successes if you just look at the stats.
Tune in tomorrow, third down and five. Back to the outside and a diving catch.
That's a great job by Kenny. Tune in tomorrow, diving catch. That was good.
Kenny Albert is the best.
But now you got to drop in 3-6 Eastern. We got a little. Now you got to throw in all the variables, the Twitter account.
I got to throw in 3-6 Eastern. That's noon to 3 Pacific.
Throw Big Mike, you know, Santer's Twitter handle. D-Cell, give him a little love.
CBSSportsRadio.com.
You know I'm going to be listening, and I'm going to have notes, and that thing's going to be running. We're going to have it recorded. Hey, we'll play it back on Monday.
I'll take care of it.
I know you will. Let's get the inbounds out of bounds. Here we go.
Anything can happen in sports and often does. What's right, what's wrong, and who's just crazy? We decide. Inbounds and out of bounds now. With Tiki and Tierney.
All right, here we go. After the Jacks fell behind 25-0 at the half against the Bucks, fans started chanting for Gardner Minshew.
Gardner.
We want Gardner. We want
Gardner. I wish I was watching this game. I was watching it only through the red zone.
That's how I was watching
so
it.
So I didn't get the chance. I didn't hear it.
It was a route. I'm like, I don't even have to watch. And then Gardner came in and the red zone kept going to it.
Yeah.
Because he was in the red zone a lot and he scored a few points here. Doug Marone obliged here. He benched Big Nick. Nick going to the bench after Minshew got the tap on the shoulder. He came in the game. Now, yesterday, Marone announced that Minshew's going to start this weekend against the Chargers. Keep in mind, Foles has 3 years and nearly $75 million left on the deal. Not all guaranteed, but a decent chunk. And his 0-for-3 got hurt early in the season.
Yeah.
Week 1, actually. First drive, I think. With just 2 touchdowns and 2 picks in 3 games since coming back. While Minshew was 4-4 as the starter, and he injected that team with some real life. In or out. The Jaguars are making a mistake moving Foles back to the bench.
I'm going
to
say out of bounds. Doug Marone hasn't had a lot of success this season. And some of the things... Some of the things he says, you're just kind of like, all right, whatever, coach. But what he said about Nick Foles was right. He said, our offensive line is playing so bad. He was self-critical of his line that he can't move. And that's why he had all those turnovers in this game. 2 fumbles and an interception. He's constantly harassed. He is not athletic. I like Nick Foles. He's a good guy. He's a great guy, actually.
He's a good guy. He's someone I'm starting for the football team.
But in today's NFL, where these DNs, and especially against the Bucks, who we don't talk about them enough, Shaq Barrett, who is one of the candidates for Defensive Player of the Year, leading the league in sacks and forced fumbles, Nick Foles is a sitting duck, dude.
Yeah, he is.
So they had to start play Gardner Minshew. Otherwise, the thing would have been a 50-0 route. So I get it. I feel bad for Nick Foles, but this is the right decision because their O-line is not good right now.
I agree. I would say out of bounds. The Jaguars are making a mistake. No, they're doing what they have to do to try to salvage a little something out of the season. Keep in mind, too, you know, Doug Marone, seats get hot, man. I mean, if he gets fired, I mean, if he doesn't finish well, he's going to get fired.
That's right.
And the one thing to stave off the negative energy from fans is youthful exuberance.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care what team, like Knicks fans or something, hey, as long as you have Barrett, or, you know, not that he's playing great, but he's playing well, there's at least a hope, something to bridge the miserable present to the hopeful future. And that's what Gardner Minshew does, theoretically. Well, actually, more than theoretically. When he plays, he's actually pretty good. I said to you off air yesterday, he's got this magic sense. When he's, like, inside the tight red, like, he is so adept at weaving in and out. I mean, his ability to identify space and utilize is a real talent that you can't measure at the combine. So you get more intel on Minshew. You already know who Nick Foles is. Smart move. I totally agree. You got to play Gardner Minshew.
Are you in or are you out?
All right, let's get to the NBA. Now, the Bucks won their 12th straight game last night. They crushed the Knicks, 132-88, complete no-show.
Mm.
And now have the best record in the NBA. The Bucks had the best record in the NBA last season as well, but fell a game shy of the NBA Finals, as we know. The reigning MVP, Giannis, is even better this year. averaging 31 points, 13 rebounds, and an NBA best of PER of almost 34. I mean, that is... any just for those, I mean, everybody knows PER by now, but if you're still kind of from the dinosaur stat era, that 31-32 range for PER is generally considered MVP territory.
Yep.
He's almost 34.
Yep.
So they did lose Malcolm Brogdon, their sixth man ace, mm-hmm. so he's with the Pacers now, as we know. In or out, the Bucks still need to add another piece along with Giannis, and another piece meaning another star to win the title.
I'm going to say inbounds of this, BT, because what we saw in the postseason last year is that you can limit Giannis's success by forcing him into the mid-range and out near the perimeter because he can't shoot yet. Now, he's upped his three-point percentage a little bit, 25% last year. It's 30% this year. But in the process of working on that, his free throw percentage has gone down, as has his field goal percentage. So there's like this, he's fits and starts in his learning process right now as a scorer. Look, he's still amazing. He might be the MVP again. But I think if they want to truly compete against some of the elite teams, not just in the East, but also in the West, they got to add a superstar score, and they don't have that right now.
I don't think they need a superstar. They need some sort of tweakage, whether it's a sniper. And every time we say this, we keep saying, well, there's not many snipers. All the good, the Lakers would love a sniper. All the team, everybody would love an extra shooter. I get that. Listen, who was Toronto's second star last year? I mean, was it Siakam? I don't mean what you know about Siakam this year. Yeah, in spurts it was Siakam.
In real time, yeah.
Yeah, maybe Lowry a little bit. I mean, Van Fleet.
Van Fleet.
I mean, it was kind of dispersed throughout the team. I know
that's
Kawhi's better than Giannis, and he's more efficient.
True.
I get that. So it's not the perfect comparison. I actually think there's going to be a couple of teams, and the Knicks are one of them. How would Marcus Morris look on the Bucks? He's a shooter. He's a scorer. He's tough. The Knicks signed five veterans with the hopes of just being competitive this year. They're one of they're the worst team in the NBA. They're going to get rid of a lot of dead weight, manageable contract. I don't think they
need
a star.
All power forwards.
Exactly, five power forwards. They don't need a superstar. They need the right piece. And if they get it, they'll have a real chance to get to the finals and maybe win.
Are you in or are you out?
Let's get to Ole Miss. This isn't good.
All right.
So they fired 30-year head coach Matt Luke after going 4-8 this year, 15-21 overall, and the Rebel player is not happy about this. So after the program announced the firing to the team, many of the players angrily got up. They walked out of the meeting, and one of their offensive linemen told the Mississippi Clarion Ledger that, quote, half the team, end quote, is talking about leaving, and center Eli Johnson added, quote, a lot of guys came to school here because of Coach Luke. Luke. They don't have any ties to Ole Miss football. They came here for Coach Luke. That's what scares me is how are those guys going to respond? End quote. Coach Luke has those crazy eyes. Look at those eyes. He looks kind of like Coach Gase eyes a little bit here. He wins about as much as Coach Gase, too. Inbounds, out of bounds. Programs should consult with players before making major personnel decisions.
No, they can't do that because players are temporary. And there's this, you're talking about the length of the or the organization as a whole, which includes the school. So you can't talk to the players about it or get their approval. However, the players are making an interesting point here. I can picture the Matt Luke at every school. And he's this great coordinator or position coach who knows how to talk to kids, knows how to talk to parents.
Mm-hmm.
He goes and sits in your living room. You're like, this guy's like my other dad or my big brother or whatever it may be. I love this guy.
Yep.
He was an O-line coach there from 2012 to 16, then the interim head coach, and he's been the head coach for 2 years. You could feel that some of those players that had been there with him for the long haul were like cheering for him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, dude, I love you, man. You got me here. I came here because you recruited me here. It's like Danny Wilmer for me at Virginia. He was a line coach who was an awesome recruiter. We went there because of him. Yes, it was a good program, and George Welch was great and everything else, but Danny Wilmer was the reason I went to...
I remember you telling me that, went to
UVA, and if he had ascended to head coach, and I'm rooting for him, and then you fire him after two seasons as head coach,
I'd get
pissed off, too.
That's right.
So you don't consult them, but you got to read the room a little bit better.
You got to read the room. My answer is with you. A total alignment, absolutely out of bounds. There's just too many variables. Mm-hmm. There's just too many... decisions that need to be made by adults.
Agreed.
Really, that where you step back and you remove yourself from the emotion of a tough loss or a locker room that's fractured. Now, the great schools, the great programs have clarity and mm-hmm. they're able to sort through the murkiness and really get a sense of what the kids want, but more importantly, what the kids need.
That's right.
Because not every kid wants to be coached up the right way. A lot of them do. A lot of them get shortchanged this generation. A lot of them do want to get coached up the right way. But you've got to have adults need to be adults, and adults make those decisions. And I agree with you.
But
and
adults need to know the what's going to happen.
No, I agree with that, too.
You know what I mean?
You got to have a sense of, hey, if there's going to be a mass exodus, we might have to reconsider. No, there's a lot of variables, but I'm on the same page with you. Third hour coming up. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.